In this episode, you'll discover how to avoid the four major potholes where husbands blindly destroy the progress they've made in marriage. So welcome in, heroic husbands, to the Be the Husband She Brags About podcast. This is your one podcast for learning everything you need to know to become the marriage-transforming hero of your relationship. I hear you all cry, "Mark, why should I bother my backside to sit here and listen to the end of this episode?" Well, the three specific major benefits you'll gain by listening to the end of this episode are: you know how to recognize these potholes and avoid destroying the progress you've created. It's the obvious benefit. Number two, you'll learn the one mindset trick that golfing legend Jack Nicklaus used that set him apart from all other competitors that you can use to enter legendary husband status and avoid these potholes in doing so. Number three, major benefit, you make a massive step in overcoming your only enemy in marriage, your righteous high. It's a part of touching base, heroic humility. I know the heroic humility I'm kicking off with this episode, it's the ground of truth of where I'm at. You might pick it up in my voice, I might have a cough, you might hear, and I do ask you man to man to don't be so fussy with any nasal sounds or coughs that you hear during. I'm in the midst of, well, I'm coming out to the far side of a really bad head cold. Nothing serious, like, was I risking death? No. But was I feeling like death? Yeah, I was feeling exceptionally bad the last 3 or 4 days. It's in the middle of my work week, clients, community, you know, just we're doing major upgrades in the Heroic Husbands training and community platform. So there was a ton of things that I was really trying to place my awareness on, and I wasn't getting very far. So this episode is very real and live in my nervous system, and I wanted to bring it. I really try and bring episodes when it's real and live in my lived experience. It helps bring that authentic essence and practice to it. The introduction to the four major potholes. You're going to be hearing me, guys, drinking during this because my voice and gets very really really tickly. I'm trying to suppress that, those major coughs that are coming through. Anyway, the four major potholes that I want you guys to tattoo into your heads, they're not the only potholes. When I was writing up this episode and reflecting on it, I was reflecting on my own first-hand lived experience with my queen, and in my years of marriage transformations, what, six and a half years at this point, and what I've learned were the key moments when I would drop my practice. I'd be doing well, I'm storming on, things are better in marriage, and then crash, bang, whack, a couple of days, a week, and I'd be getting feedback like, "You're just back to square fucking one, you're never changing, etc., etc." And I definitely have heard this very, very often with guys that I'm working with and within the movement, the community, is this idea of, you know, going good, and then crash, bang. This period comes when it's like all the progress goes, and guys get into, there can be this panic mode of, you know, the queen's feedback, because the better you get. It's this Dave Allen idea from getting things done methodology. It's like when you start performing really well as a husband, and not that it's a performance, but your embodiment of presence, of progress, of protection is getting better, you're communicating better, you're leading the conversation, you know, you're bringing more romantic, you're bringing that fire back, you're leading, ultimately you're leading as a man, as a husband, as a dad. Your queen is surrendering into that, and she's feeling, wow, this is wonderful. So it becomes a major shock to her system, and her greatest fear, the greatest fear of queens, is it's just been a lucky period of a couple of weeks, couple of months, but he's inevitably going to go back to square one. That is part their fear, part wounding and part lived experience. They've experienced it quite a bit where they give you feedback and you just, you do good for a couple of weeks and then you go back to square one. So I have heard that from so many guys that these major potholes are ones, are experiences that are inevitable to come up in all of your lives. These are the most common ones. Number one, being sick. Hence, I'm bringing this week. It's so potently alive in my own lived experience as a husband, as a dad. Number two, stress at work. You know, it's like, it's one of these points where we tend to collapse. We tend to get absorbed into the so-called problem or the stress at work. Number three, troubles with family of origin. Conflict between family of origin and you, or family of origin and your queen, and different values and the type you're trying to parent in one way, you're trying to live your life in one way, and family of origin are continually trying, as they classically do, to pull you back into their system of how they knew you used to relate to them before this evil woman came on the scene and actually said, "You're my king. You actually have, I'm initiating you," and it's like, you're accountable to me, you're not accountable to them anymore. It's time to choose sides. And that is the initiation for a man. You've got to choose the side, and there's only one side to choose, which is your queen, you're her king, your kids, that fortress, that is sacred. Nobody else counts outside of that. So troubles with family of origin are a real classic thing that collapses beautiful progress that you guys have made. And the other one, well, I could have brought in quite a number of different ones, but I do think that this comes up. It's like this invisible one that comes up. It's overdoing it at home, denying yourself chill time. Quite often, when you get really sincere, like you're listening to the podcast, you've joined Heroic Husbands, the training community platform, etc., etc., you're sincerely committing to doing better. That's actually part of like the sentence I've just said. You're doing better, but it's coming from a state of doing. It's still that old style, un-trauma informed thing that we respond as men. We do, but we're not being. We're doing more and more around the house. We're doing more in parenting. Like, Queen has given you feedback. You need to do more, you know, to support her in the evenings. You need to do more supporting her getting the kids out. You need to do more in planning and making decisions. And so you're doing. But you don't, like, in the doing, you get lost. And you deny yourself chill time. You deny yourself time to charge your own battery, and resentment builds from that. So I'm going to put these out as four major potholes, and I want you guys touching base with, let's just touch base. I want you, this is the heroic humility part. How would your queen, and by extension your kids, how would your family members rate your mood? 10 being, oh, he was in great form. He really, and I don't mean great form that you have to be stupendously happy and you're sick or etc., etc. But how would they rate you on how your mood impacted the rest of the members in the family or not? Like 10 is, no, he was actually shit hot. His mood, no matter what he was experiencing in that period of being sick, of high stress at work, of troubles with family of origin, or the overdoing it when he's doing a whole heap of stuff around the house. You know, 10 is, no, his mood is good with us. Actually, he's like really self-regulated in his emotional state of being, how he's feeling, and it doesn't matter what he's going through. 1 is, he's like a fucking antichrist. He's like a boy bitch. He's a temperamental teenager. He's a beaten boy. He flings out his sadness and low energy. He flings out these aggressive little tantrums. He hardens up. He goes into indifference, etc., etc. Or anywhere in between. Touch base in your mind now. The last time that you were really sick, where you felt really bad, you had like a, I don't know, a real bad pain in your back or your neck or some body part, you were injured, you twisted your ankle playing football, you had a real bad tummy bug, head cold, whatever, chest infection, etc., etc. How was your mood? How were you to be around for your family members? Touch base with yourself and get real. Just, and have a chuckle inside of yourself. Don't bring any, I challenge you not to bring any of the beaten boy stuff of like, the beaten boy part of us just loves sprinkling shame and feeling bad about it. I encourage you to bring like a chuckle. Be like, if you're listening as you drive to work or you're, whatever the context is when you're listening, have like a chuckle of realization inside of yourself. You know, it really happens when guys get together. It's a deep quality that I bring that I couldn't give a fuck like how you're doing or not. There's a complete non-judgmentality. I don't have one neuron in my nervous system that can really judge a guy for being out of whack with anything. I've been such an asshole with my queen and my kids for so long that I'm not here to ever judge a guy. So it's actually a really great masculine practice that when you notice you're out of integrity and you notice that, yeah, you get into asshole mode, that you have a chuckle. Not to downplay it, but to just go, you're not noticing. These are habitual pathways that your awareness goes in your mind, that those pathways were set down when you were growing up. So they're not you. So the chuckle is a deep spiritual chuckle where you're like, yeah, you caught me out, Mark. Yeah, fuck. I was like... You know, so the last time that you had stress at work, you know, like a couple of days or a week at stress at work or finances, how were you to be around as a human being? You know, when you take all the, and we'll talk about the righteous high that goes and all the ways it minimizes and normalizes being an asshole. When you take all of that rationalization away, how were you really to be around? How would your kids have reported you were as a dad? How would your queen have reported you were at home at the end of the day, you know, when, with stress at work or how present you were. Then the last time that you had troubles with family of origin, I know that was a fucking major one for me with my queen. Troubles, like I'd come off a phone call with one of my brothers and I wouldn't be right, you know, quote unquote right. I wouldn't be fully present. I'd withdraw into this weird, dissociated, funky, beaten boy, sad, just not present, the life would go out of me. And it was a really stressful thing for me to try and engage in conversations with my queen when I was having issues with my family of origin. So that was a major one where we could be going good and it just took, that my queen would say that to me, it's like, we could be going good, Mark, for a month and you get one fucking phone call from your brothers and then you're into the shitter. So the four major potholes, we've got number one, being sick, number two, stress at work, number three, troubles with family of origin, and number four, this idea of overdoing at home, denying yourself chill time. I know myself, guys, when I reflect on that, it's like I'd come some arrogant little shithead when at times my queen would be at work. She used to so often report that I became impossible to be with when she came home because in evenings that I had done so much and tended to the kids, tended to the dogs, cooked dinner, cleaned house, done all of these things, she's like, she would come back to a very high statistical chance that I'd be grumpy, that I'd be hard with the kids, that I'd be sort of doing this authoritarian, like telling the girls what to do and I'd be cross. And she was like, wow, you know, it's like, I'd rather you just left the fucking dinner to me and it's like, I'll cook it an hour or an hour and a half after our usual dinner time if this is what I have to come home to. She had that very, very often. It was a distinct pattern for years. Where, you know, my beaten boy, my temperamental teenager would feel bad, would like just take all my undealt with resentment and use that as a moment to just spill bullshit out. So overdoing at home, denying chill time. can be a real one. How has that been for you when you're doing a ton to help out your queen, to help out? And have you ever found yourself getting prickly, getting really triggerable when your queen says anything or anybody says anything beyond that adds one more, you know, responsibility on top of it, or when there's any sort of an idea that she's just not seeing me? I mean, like, can somebody just appreciate me? So touch base with yourself. The four major potholes. How have you been the last number of years? Lord help us. Some of us will be going back, like me. I was going back 12 years, 13 years, going, fuck, that's like, that's a shit show, Mark. On those four major potholes. There are probably other major potholes. I'm imagining I'm biased with these. These definitely ring home with me, and my bias might have it overweighted that I pick up the personal relevance in other guys. But I have to say, I really passionately believe that these are four very common ones. You might have other ones, but let's work with these. You might recognize your own potholes that are more unique to you, and kudos to you if that self-reflection comes up. Why are these major potholes? There's a part where when your cranial brain gets the why, gets the mechanism, it then opens up your heart brain and gut brain, the whole embodied nervous system, to allow that insight to flood into the whole system. When the cranial brain has no idea why, really hampers your development as a man. So hence I go to the mechanism. This is pure neurophysiological, psychological, leading edge research. Why are these major potholes? Well, a core nervous system aspect for us as men is being sick, stress at work, troubles with family of origin, and overdoing it at home when you're denying chill time. These experiences tend to make us feel vulnerable. And I know the word vulnerable is the most fucking vulnerable word, vulnerability provoking word. It's like, no, I don't feel vulnerable. It's the last word we want to admit that we experience. We will minimize and normalize to extreme levels to just not ever admit that, yeah, there's a moment when we feel vulnerable. And when do we feel vulnerable? When we feel we're lacking control in a situation. You know, being sick. Well, when your whole identity revolves around producing, providing, and procreating. Well, you know, when you're feeling sick, a lot of our indoctrinated identity as men, it's taken from us. We can't produce. You're not really useful at work. I know this week, I had tons of things that I needed to tick off. I had powerful guys that are helping me out behind the scenes, that there's projects going, there's a whole overhaul and an upgrade of major stuff. There was stuff I really, really, really wanted to get done, and I didn't have the energy to do it. So there's a vulnerability. There's a, God, I promised those guys, and now I'm not able to do it this week. Stress at work, you know, there's that sense of, well, sense of control. The producing and providing is really this potent two roles that we have. Well, you need to produce at work, and that helps you provide for your house and home. And when there's stress at work, there's this stress at work really triggers this, am I able to do this? Am I able to continue this? What if this situation gets even more out of my control and I can't bring that stress back down? A sense of autonomy, maybe it's not your workplace, or if it is your company, you know, if you're that stressed, what if this goes out of control and you can't, you know, bring this fire back on under control, etc., etc., that's causing the stress. Troubles with family of origin, hey, just that capacity, like, to to provide safety for your family, that provision of protection for your family when you have deep emotional connections and attachment with your family of origin, it can really come and feel like the most exquisitely vulnerable, out of control situation where your uninitiated nervous system feels it's an absolute moral crime to do anything against your mother or your father, your family of origin, and to choose you and your queen stance and life perspective and make a stand and go, hey, I love you guys. You brought me into this world. You tended to me all my childhood to get me to where I am now. But now I'm a married man. Now this is my family. The people in my fortress, they're the ones that are my absolute priority. If there's ever a decision to be made between which the philosophy and the value system and the decision making and the prioritization of which fortress I'm going to go with, it's never going to be my family of origin fortress and the playbook that worked there, ever. Let that be known. When you have that clarity, there's no stress, but 99.999% of men do not have that clarity, that black and white clarity, that there's that divide between fortress of childhood and your current fortress. And then the overdoing at home, denying chill time. Well, there's a vulnerability there because we've been conditioned growing up that, you know, with the good boy conditioning. If you tick enough boxes, mammy will be really, really happy with you and all your attachment needs will be met. And yet it doesn't work like that when you're an adult, when you're a husband, when you're a dad. You know, it's like the playbook doesn't go like that with your wife, and it shouldn't go like that with your wife, because that worked when you were 4, 5, 6, 7 years of age. You did a ton of cool shit that you knew your mother valued, and if you took the stress off your mother, she'd be like, oh, good boy, Mark. You know, it's like, and you were a good boy and you got all the oxytocin, the serotonin, the dopamine kicks inside, and you were like, oh, that playbook, I love it when I do stuff, and you know, I get the whole gush and rush of it, my attachment needs being met by this external feminine figure. But we bring the same playbook into marriage, and in early days marriage transformation, you can, with very good intentions, do more meaningful stuff in a lot of arenas, in a lot of aspects of your married life together. But when you're coming at that doing from that old, through the eyes of that old paradigm, it can get very vulnerable, because you're like, I'm doing all this stuff, but I'm not getting the feedback that I've come to expect. I deserve, I'm entitled to, you know, her gushing and, you know, swooning over me going, oh, good boy. You know, it's like really infantile shadow work and distressing and repulsive to our queens when we get like that, because they can feel energetically that we're coming like this vulnerable little kid. But it's real until you recognize it, and it's real. So these four potholes have this essence of, they make us feel vulnerable, like we're, our underbelly is out, that our identity of ticking the sacred boxes, or we have been made feel they're sacred, of ticking the box of producing, providing and procreating, hey, in with that level of stress, you know, being sick, stress at work, troubles with family of origin, overdoing it at home, exhaustion, we don't tend to have the mojo in the bedroom anymore. So, you know, those core tenets of the bullshit society that says, hey, you need to produce as a man, you need to provide, and you need to procreate, when they're taken from us momentarily, you know, and they don't seem available, we feel very vulnerable. It's like our identity has crumbled. Our value as a man has crumbled, is gone. It's really vulnerable. I want to bring key fundamental points that I want you guys getting. There's a difference between resistance and flow. I've spoken to this before, but I can't overstate it. What happens in these four major potholes is we can be having, we're in this good moments, what we would call good pleasurable moments in marriage, where things are going and there's an emotional flow happening in your queen, there's an emotional flow happening in you, in your marriage together, intimacy together, there's flow. Predominantly there's flow, and when both of you guys are flowing individually and collectively, hey, that's setting the tone. You will find that your kids are flowing more because they really reflect back, uncomfortably so, where you're at. It's comfortable when they're reflecting back good shit because they're feeling safe. But when you're not flowing emotionally as a couple, that's when, quote unquote, your kids get bold and they act up because they're trying, their nervous system is screaming. They're just going, this whole fucking lived experience with you guys is bullshit. That's what a bold kid is about. It takes a very rare parent to actually see it for what it is and go, wow, they're not being bold. That's their nervous system calling us on our bullshit. So when there's emotional flow, there's this freedom and fulfillment. So you go through this period of time when things are going good and the progress, all marital progress is an establishment of a pattern of flow. Day to day, there's this flow. Your queen is surrendering into it. She's feeling trust. There's feeling attraction. You're in flow. The horrific, emotional, absolute fucking punch in the gut to your queen is when you come upon a pothole and all of a sudden, or with rapid effect, your emotional system goes from flowing, I was just enjoying a couple of weeks where, you know, Mark is just flowing. He's actually happy. He's on point. There's humor. He comes in, you know, or I come in from work and he's not an asshole anymore. He's flowing. He's happy. There's a fulfillment. There's a freedom. We're relaxing. The kids are relaxing. And then I get sick. Or then I have stress at work. Or then I have trouble. What the punch in the stomach to our queens is, they've allowed themselves to relax into the progress, into you're actually doing better. Might be more than a couple of weeks. It could be a couple of months and things are like, God, are we at the promised land? There's this sense of hope that's coming up inside of her and hope inside of you and inside of your kids. And then one of the potholes comes. And if you don't recognize it, this is the major point, guys. This is why this episode is coming, and I want you to lean in and like lock this shit in so you recognize the pothole. Then all of a sudden you get sick. Was I expecting the head cold? No. The fucker came. It happened. Like doing what I was doing, all everything optimized in my health and blah, blah, blah. But hey, the head cold happened. So it comes out of nowhere. This physiological stressor on the nervous system. Being sick comes up, stress at work, troubles with family of origin, or you're overdoing it at home and you're denying yourself chill time. And then emotional resistance comes in. So flow is when your nervous system is flowing with what is. It's not arguing at all with what's happening in your life, in your marriage, in your queen's human experience, in your kid's human experience, in your human experience. You're flowing with what is. All Zen teachings, fucking Power of Now, Eckhart Tolle, Buddhism, Taoism, they all talk about flow. If you talk about peak performance teachings, hey, flow, that's the term they use. To enter a flow state, you are completely at one with the person you're with the task you're performing, with what is happening. It's a fucking beautiful state of being. Resistance is the polar opposite of flow. So you go from a peak performance, a peak human experience, to the opposite. It's the worst. Where your unconscious part, your playbook from childhood, comes up and starts arguing with what is. And I'm going to say that resistance is based on an entitlement perspective. Those of you that have been listening in, you'll have heard me talking about this before. Why we get into such issues in these major potholes is when we feel emotionally, psychologically, and psychologically vulnerable as men. It's a scary zone. The confusion that comes in that, we tend to go to judgmentality, to righteousness. And it's the entitlement perspective. And the entitlement perspective, what's pulsating in our nervous systems, if not like through a direct thought, but it's the paradigm that we're seeing our life in those moments, is what am I not getting in this situation? It's entitlement. It's an immature, uninitiated, unevolved, boyish part of us that has yet to wake up to the fullness of taking radical ownership of everything in your lived experience, which foundationally is an inside-out job. You can't take radical ownership of everything on the outside if you primarily don't take radical ownership for everything that's happening in your nervous system. So the entitlement perspective is perfectly natural when you're 5 years of age. It's like, what am I not getting in this situation? Mom, dad, like, you should be, you know, and enter the long list of things they should be doing. And you'll see it. And you'll feel it. Touch base in your nervous system, guys, when you're reflecting on the last time you were being sick, stress at work, troubles with family of origin, or overdoing it at home, denying yourself chill time. Was there any part of your awareness going to a part of your mind that was complaining or resentful that you weren't getting respect, you weren't getting love, you weren't getting appreciation from your queen and kids, you weren't getting the validation of your human experience? I'm in a stressful situation. I'm sick. Validate me. You know, you weren't getting the amount of caring that you felt you were owed or deserved. You weren't being praised. You weren't getting praise for how valiant you're being. I mean, I'm being sick here. You know, I'm suffering a flu and a fever. And, you know, how dare you give out to me for how I was with our kids? You know, like, give me praise for how valiant, and, you know, I am. I'm like a knight in shining armor, how I'm dealing with this, blah, blah, blah. Because why? We probably are doing it a step better than what our dads did, so we think we're being heroic. Yet that difference is relevant only in our nervous system and our lived past. If you're being an asshole to the people who are living with you in the present, they don't have any comparison. They don't give a fuck if you've made progress on the generation before. If you're being an asshole to them now, you're being an asshole to them now. End of story. That's a major thing for guys to wake up to. This feeling I'm doing it much better than my dad before me. Doesn't matter to people around you now. So every guy in the room is going to be putting his hand up going, fuck yeah, my awareness goes to this part, this box in my mind of what am I not getting in this situation? And that's where regret and resentment gets built. So flow, the byproducts of emotional flow are freedom and fulfillment. And that's in the zone. That's the upward spiral. That's the infinite game of married life. And it's phenomenal. But then resistance comes in, and the byproducts of emotional resistance are regret and resentment. So it's essential that you practice during resistance. I say train for flow, practice true resistance. You train to be in flow 24/7, but there's going to be moments when resistance will come up. It'll rear its sneaky head. You got to practice true resistance so you can keep the overall trend of flow without going into an absolute nosedive during these pothole moments. That's the time when you practice most. That's the time when you step up the most in your conscious awareness of what's happening in your nervous system or not. Now, the major thing that you need to practice and be aware of and have the humility as a man to really take on board is, like, the major warning is there's a rapid building of what I call the righteous high. And it's that ruminating in your head, thinking of unfairness of how your wife is treating you, what she's not giving you, what you're not getting from her, what you're not getting from your kids. The rapid building of the righteous high is what takes guys down. And your whole awareness gets absorbed into this story of the entitlement, what I'm not getting. And now you're marinating and you're ruminating your head and you're thinking and thinking and thinking of what you're not getting and judging your queen. She said that thing, but she should appreciate, like, how dare her, like, that's so unfair, blah, blah, blah. That righteous high can last several days of being sick. That righteous high can last several weeks, you know, stress at work. You get more and more stressed. She's more and more upset. The kids are more and more out of balance. And you're like there in this sort of beaten boy, poor me. I'm the victim of this story. God, if they just could appreciate how hard I'm working at work, etc., etc. But really, that's just an escape clause for excusing your own assholery when you come home. So the rapid building of the righteous high, where you're shifting the responsibility to your lack of emotional self-regulation, you're shifting the responsibility to your queen and to your kids, what they're not giving you. Give me a break. We literally say, we'll use the words, give me some slack. Can you not give me a break here? Can you not give me some space? Have you ever thought those words or said them to your queen? In writing for this episode, my queen said that to me. You'd say, I used to say, could you just give me some, what was it? Give me some space or give me some credit. Could she said, you were saying that in multiple different ways, Mark. Could you not give me some? So yeah, it's like my past coming up. Now, knowing the mechanism and really getting clean and clear within your nervous system and coming to know your mind and your awareness, how it goes in your mind, really brings you to the next level of practice. Well, what you really want to get to is, like, what's the remedy of all of this? I'm actually going to slow down. I'm mistaking in bringing that wording up now. What's the remedy to the righteous high? The foundational remedy has already been spoken to, and that's why I've slowed down. The ultimate remedy to all issues in your marriage, all issues in parenting, all issues in any human experience that is creating you and people around you suffering that you want to end, the fundamental first part of the remedy, that if you go without that, well, you will not be able to implement any other remedy thereafter. The first foundational part, the keystone part of the remedy, is awareness of the dysfunction. Is awareness of the righteous high is trying to absorb your awareness into that box that just has you ruminating again and again on what you're not getting. That is the key. Without that awareness getting triggered inside your nervous system, where your awareness becomes aware of awareness. This is, you could say, high-end Buddhist teachings, high-end peak performance teachings, but I want you guys, you know, being a husband in married life nowadays, we're the most important leaders on the planet. I passionately believe that. There's no other leaders on the planet that are more important than us in the unfoldment of humanity and where we're going. The next generations are being built, are the characters of the next generations of humanity, they're being born out from the ecosystem of the family units of the fortresses that they live in. So your responsibility, your power, your impact is enormous. It goes on for the next seven generations and beyond. And it's also the single most challenging leadership position on the planet because, well, there's no let off, is there? You don't get to really go and go, well, hey, I'm just heading off on 2 weeks holidays now. You don't get to do that pretty much ever. You know, you do, you know what I mean? Like you don't, oh, hey, I'm going on sabbatical. I'm going to take a year out, or I'm going to take paternity leave from family. You know, you don't get that. You know, these issues, you know, being sick, you can call into work. Oh, I'm sick. going to take a few days off, you know, I've got 20 days sick leave that I'm allowed to take off. It's, hey, I'm not going in this week. Fuck that. You know, it's like, you don't have that as a leader of your family. But that awareness of waking the fuck up in the midst of your nervous system printing out your external reality. It prints it out from exactly where your awareness goes inside your own mind and what story it prints out from there. Your entire life is made from there. When you guys get this and take it on, not as an interesting sort of thing, like, oh, well, it's sort of cool what Mark says, you know, it's like, yeah, awareness, I can sort of get that. And then you fuck off into the rest of your day, the rest of your week, month, and you don't actually implement that. I'm really, this is like the entire change of my entire existence, and I have brought a trend of established progress in my marriage, in my sex life, in my parenting, in my finances, in my career, in my self-expression, in my health. I'm taking on the guitar. I'm going to do the same there. It's built on this foundational practice. And this is a masculine practice. Your infinite value as a man, as a husband, as a dad, as a lover, comes from this grounded sense of, my entire control comes from taking ownership of where I place my awareness in my mind and thus in my reality. What the ultimate fucking beautiful gift is in this, guys, for that masculine core. Do you know what I said, where that feeling vulnerable is such a cagey, sort of horrible feeling place for us to be in as men, with the bullshit conditioning of this society? When you finally wake the fuck up, drop your spiritual balls out of the pelvis, let them hang, you know, let them hang vulnerably on the outside, let them shine as a beacon of masculinity to the world. The man's balls have finally dropped far enough out that he's proud to be a man. He's showing his spiritual balls to the world. You know, with great power comes great responsibility and all the rest. The great gift that's on the table for every single one of you in this is that you don't have to feel vulnerable anymore when you take ownership of your awareness. It's the existential end of the crisis for a modern man, for a man of any live, at any age, now, alive now, in the past, or in future. When you take full ownership of the fact that your entire inner world and outer world experience is created from your mastery of what you're doing with your awareness, you don't have to feel vulnerable anymore, because your entire lived experience comes back under your control. Is this available to you? Well, of course it is. I'd say the only thing that stops you like really leaning in this is spiritual fucking laziness. You know, it does it take an effort? Of course it does. It's the ultimate self-mastery, Pat. So you get that point that the ultimate remedy is becoming aware of where awareness is in your mind. Awareness of awareness. Seems like a brain fuck, but it's like really tangible. You can get to this when you are awareness. Your awareness is looking at the thoughts and the emotions and the printout like a quality control manager is in a factory going, that toy, that's good, that's good, that's good. Wow, that's really broken. Nobody's going to enjoy that on the outside. Oh, that too, that too, that too. And then at the quality control manager goes, well, we're just not going to ship any of these products that are coming out. We need to look at what is not happening up the way in the factory. It's like the quality control manager goes, ain't going to send these out into the world. Awareness does that. Your awareness goes, none of these thoughts, none of these, this emotional state, this has nothing to do with your queen, this has nothing to do with your kids, this is just like a burp of habitual ways that your awareness learned to go in your nervous system, in your mind when you were young. So we're not going to follow that. The quality control manager part goes, fuck that. Now, I mentioned Jack Nicklaus. What has a golfer got to do with all this? When Jack Nicklaus, the legendary golfer, was asked, it's like, Jack, there's a lot of top-end players that are training just as much as you, that on their day, they can be as good as you, if not better, but you're the one that is number one for the longest period of time. You're the one, I believe, still has the record of the most major tournaments, Masters in golf. They asked, like, what is it that sets you apart from all of these guys that on their day can be as good as you? And Jack's response was quite telling and very simple. He's like, I learned to play poorly well. He's like, there's days when the putts just don't go in. He's like, they just, you know, when I'm on my great day, it's like, hey, it's easy. It's just, I would say, it's just in flow. What Jack was saying, putting it through the lens of the language I'm using with you guys, is there's days when resistance is just there and it's like there's not much you can do with it. But like what he said was, it's like I learned to play poorly well. I wouldn't nosedive into poor me, I'm having a bad day, like, oh God, and start getting frustrated. It's like he would flow with what is. His nervous system is where it's at. The putts aren't going down. He's not reaching the green when normally would reach the green, or he's taking two more shots to get out of a sand bunker. He's like, he would flow with what it was, with what was happening, and he would manage to play poorly well. He wouldn't drop his score too bad, and he would grind it out ultimately through that round, and if he had to do it for two rounds in a row, and then day three and four, he'd get into sensational form, and because of playing poorly well in the first 2 days of a tournament, he set the foundation that he could still win the tournament. Where the other players would get into a real shit fit and they would drop a lot of shots, mainly because they didn't keep their awareness in the present moment and they allowed their awareness go to frustration, and now they've dropped two and three shots more than they needed in a round. You know, Jack Nicklaus was coming in even par. He had a bad round, but he's even par. The other guys that on their day are just as good as him, they've dropped. They're three over. And at the end of a year, at the end of a career, that makes a massive difference. And I would say that the playing poorly well is exceptionally important as a mindset for every single husband out there. The four major potholes, that's when, hey, it's emotionally intense. Can it be challenging? Yeah. Fuck yeah. Being sick this week, was it easier, simpler to carve out a cool week with my family? No. It was a spiritual dogfight at moments. There was parts of me feeling, you know, like exhausted. I had pain all over. I was taking tablets for it. I was, you know, was there humor rippling through me? Normally, humor is one thing that I just bring to life. It's one of my great human expressions that comes through me. It wasn't coming as natural and as easy and as flowing as normal. But what I did this week, and what I've learned to do, guys, with these periods of stress at work and being sick, and not to get it perfect. Again, you're not looking for perfection. It's like Jack Nicklaus. Actually, the genius is you allow yourself drop your standards of what you normally would be, but there's a dignity in it because you're really searching to play to the 10 out of 10 that is available in your nervous system in that moment. So if my nervous system isn't giving me the full energy that I would in a normal day, hey, what is my 10 out of 10? What is my best performance with my current energy levels? What is my best performance with my physical state? I'm aches and pains all over. I couldn't help Matilda with the horses like I normally would. The girls were sick as well, so there was an extra load in Matilda. I like, what's my 10 out of 10? And it's a shunt from playing poorly well through the lens of what I teach you guys, and what works so powerfully here is it's entitlement to enlightenment, where entitlement is that immature, unevolved, boyish part of us that has not been supported to come into your full manhood and your full maturing man power. That the entitlement is like, what am I getting? What am I not getting? It's a real rancid bastard part of us. It's like, it brings nothing good to life in marriage or in any part. For a golfer, for a husband, for a parent, it never brings anything of any good. It's resentful and regret building by default. Well, the shift to enlightenment is, well, what am I giving? What can I give this situation? And that changes everything. You're like, okay, I'm going through a tough time. It feels tough. It feels intense. It's challenging. Part of me feels this is hard, but what can I give? I've stress at work, but when I'm going in home, you know, what can I give? And in those moments, like this week, one thing, I didn't have the energy to do a lot of stuff around the house. And, you know, is there a part of frustration? Yeah, it's like Matilda, because of all the girls, the whole ecosystem was like really under stress and strain. You know, every person, when in a regular week, we all have our roles and things that we do to keep the whole entire ship going. And actually, 3 out of the 4 of us were out of action. Yelena and Anya were really sick as well. So there was a part of me that really wanted to do more, but I had to surrender and go, I did what I could. So I didn't do 80% of what I would have done with the horses, but I went out and did what was my usual 20%. But that was my 10 out of 10 for that day. And that level of support, Matilda really appreciated. She's like, I don't want any more from you. Don't get yourself exhausted, but I really appreciate that you're coming out here. One thing that is always available, and it's the highest strategic thing we can do as men, is appreciation and praise. You know, when you're in a vulnerable moment, being sick, stress at work, troubles with family of origin, overdoing it at home and denying of chill time and probably many other potholes, strategically lean in very heavily on appreciation and praise. Recognize that there's part of you feeling vulnerable. But one thing you can do to bring the situation back into your control is appreciate your queen. Praise your queen. I would say appreciate and praise yourself. When you're being sick, you've stress at work, troubles with family of origin, you know, like any pothole, appreciate and praise yourself. Like those things that your psyche gets resentful for and feels entitled to, you know, respect, love, appreciation, validation, caring, praise, you know, all the good shit, give it to yourself. You know, the enlightenment perspective is, what am I not giving? Well, giving isn't, it's like 50% of your giving is giving to the outside world, but the foundation of giving is giving yourself. This week, I help my own self-regulation capacity when I couldn't give, you know, my best creative energy and leadership at work. I had the energy to give myself appreciation of how far I've come in the last number of months, the last number of years. I gave myself appreciation. I gave myself validation. I gave myself love. I gave myself respect. I gave myself honoring. It's like, Mark, you're 10 out of 10 isn't anywhere near where it normally is, but let's just use this time to retreat and, you know, give yourself love. And from there, I gave my queen and I gave my kids appreciation for, you know, my queen was taking up a high level of the doing. I was like, baby, I'm just in awe of how much you give. Actually, being sick has helped me slow down enough to really notice the insane amount of things you do for us and the expressions of love. And guys, she had her, you know, she had her sails pretty fucking, you know, the wind in her sails a lot. Was it a stressful moment? Yeah, for her, but Did I add more to the experience by approaching it this way? Fuck yeah. Playing poorly, well. So, it's my expectation, guys, that you've listened to this point. Coming into landing, I challenge you to become aware and to look out with full peak performance, badass. You are one of the most important leaders on the planet with the awareness of that identity. With that identity, you are that important. You look out like a peak performer that is hungry for the next level of performance to come through you, to be more effective at creating trust and connection and attraction on as repeatable processes. Look out and expect the major potholes. And when you come upon them, have some part of your awareness go, ha, it's go time. Don't drop your game. Don't communicate a message to your queen and to your kids that, you know, your entitlement perspective is, hey, baby, drop your standards for a couple of days or a couple of weeks because I'm going through a shitty period. No, you're like, keep your fucking standards, queenly. Keep your standards of a goddess. Actually expect more of me, of my practice in these days than any other days. Because why? I've been informed. I know what these potholes are. And I'm not going to allow my boy bitch, my shitty parts, my gnarly cunt, my beaten boy, temperamental teenager, foolish philosopher, I'm not going to let them ride the wave and place my awareness on the righteous high and, you know, take you down and take all the progress down. No, I'm going to dig deep. I'm going to commit to playing poorly well. I'm going to gift and give my best from that paradigm of enlightenment, which is, what am I giving? What can I give this moment? What can I generate in this moment that's of value? What is my 10 out of 10 that is available to me now? And let's ring out that 10 out of 10 and gift it to my queen, to my kids, to the world. And you will find when you do that, these potholes, they're not potholes anymore. They're actually the platform for the next level of trust. Because when your queen realizes, wow, he's actually in a moment of being that vulnerable. He's sick. He's stressed at work. He has troubles with family of origin. And he's doing a ton of stuff around the house. And he's still regulating himself. He's still managing to bring the goods and the best. He's still managing to bring appreciation and praise to me and to the kids around. He's still managing. He's somehow, wow, fucking wow is all that's going to be coming through her nervous system. She's going to tear up. She's going to surrender even more completely. So you create a period of flow. You meet the pothole. You train for the flow. You enjoy it while it lasts. And then you practice through the resistance. And that means that you don't destroy the beautiful momentum of progress that you have created. Then you enter the infinite game of life. Then married life just is like, it's fucking happily ever after. Happy, healthy, horny. You know, that's just... It's the good shit. You get to enjoy this game. Like Jack Nicklaus. Played poorly well. He ended as the most legendary successful golfer of all time. A regular human being. He learned to play poorly well. This has been in perfect alignment with the mantra of this movement. Better husbands today. Better world tomorrow. And I'm setting the challenge to you guys coming into landing. We have created the most powerful self-assessment tool on the planet for husbands, the Heroic Husband Self-Assessment Tool. You will see the link is in the podcast description. A list of super wise, trailblazing spiritual mavericks that have been listening in. They have stormed the website and they have filled that out. There's amazing feedback going to them and the whole 9-point personalized plan, how they can improve in presence, progress and protection. I set the challenge down to you and I'm going to be reminding you of this massive game-changing tool. If you haven't went to it, prioritize. It's on average 3 to 5 minutes for guys to fill that out. It's a total game changer. If you haven't done it yet, get into the podcast note descriptions and the link will be there. In perfect alignment with the mantra of this movement. Better husbands today, better world tomorrow. Go have an amazingly beautiful kingly day.